All rise. The Minnesota Court of Appeals is now in session. Judge Cochran, Judge Larson, Judge Cleary, the Honorable Gene M. Cochran presiding.
Good morning. You may be seated. Welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. We have four cases on our oral calendar today. For purposes of the recording, I'll just note that today is January 8th, 2025. Happy New Year, everyone. We're happy to be here with you. I'm just going to take a minute here to get organized, and then we will get started. So the first case on our calendar today is 824-0645, Christopher Humphrey, Relator versus City of Minneapolis Civil Service Commission Respondent. Each party will have 15 minutes for your primary argument, and Relator will have an additional 5 minutes for rebuttal. If you can please note the party you're representing and introduce yourself at the beginning of your argument, we would greatly appreciate it. And there is a time showing on the podium there, so you can proceed when you're ready.
Good morning, judges. Joe Kelly on behalf of Christopher Humphrey, the relator in this matter. We're here on a writ challenging the quasi-judicial decision of the City of Minneapolis. The important dates to note are September 14th, 2023, which is the decision of the respondent to remove Relator from the promotion eligibility list. It's important to note that letter was sent on September 14th, 2023, and cited specifically to the Minneapolis Civil Service rules, and specifically the rule that stated that he was removed for having a record of employment that was unsatisfactory. As the briefs note, there was an attempt to find out the exact facts on why Relator was removed and received no response, so Relator was forced to submit his argument without knowing any of the facts justifying why he was removed by the Human Resources Department.
So when you say Relator was forced to submit his argument without knowing the facts, do you mean submit his appeal?
Correct. That's correct, Judge. Is under the civil service rules, there's a very short time window in which the decision from the Human Resources Department may be challenged. He timely submitted his appeal, challenging or requesting an appeal. And under the civil service rules, the Human Resources Department investigates appeals. Now, what's important to note here is that Human Resources made the decision ultimately to remove Relator from the promotion eligible list, and then they investigated themselves to determine whether they had violated the rules. The January 20th, 2024 letter that was submitted by Thomas Fox notes two different items on why Relator was removed.
I just want to make sure I'm understanding the facts correctly here, and that's the internal affairs investigation began before the sergeant posting. Can I just understand procedurally where the internal affairs investigation came during the hiring process? I just want to make sure that I'm understanding the procedural timeline.
Thank you. Yes, Judge Larson. Thank you very much. So, February 16th, 2022 is when the complaint was filed and an internal affairs investigation was opened into the relator's conduct or alleged misconduct. The sergeant's position was posted approximately 1 month later, March 12th of 2022. relator applied for and tested for the position of sergeant, and on August 4th, 2022, relator was certified as eligible and placed on the certified eligible list, despite the open internal affairs investigation. He remained, thank you, and then if you look at the addendum, Deb Kruger's memo lays out the timeline of when vacancies were created and when positions were filled. Throughout the entirety of the process, relator remained on the sergeant's eligible list, despite...
I guess I just wanted to make clear, so the city of Minneapolis knew this investigation was going on throughout this entire hiring process.
Correct.
Okay.
And in the investigation, particularly troubling is that what they presented as the alleged serious misconduct justifying the removal of Christopher Humphrey from the eligible list, in Mr. Fox's letter to the Civil Service Commission, he cites to an internal affairs interview that the relator gave. However, that interview took place after he was removed from the sergeant's eligible list. So there's no way that the Human Resources Department could have relied upon that interview when making
it. How do we know that from the record? The timing of that interview.
Well, that's what's particularly troubling is that the record that was presented to the Civil Service Commission, the dates of the interviews were not listed in the justification. However, in the February 20th, or in the letter from Thomas Fox to the Civil Service Commission, it cites to the date of the interview.
So, just so I'm clear on the timeline as well, there's a staff report dated January 29th, 2024. From in the relator's addendum from Deb Kruger to the Civil Service Commission. And because of data privacy issues, there's not a lot of detail, but we have in our record some underlying detail regarding that investigation. And that, so you're saying that the underlying investigation and the results of that Deb Kruger is relying on in this report that was done after Humphrey was removed from the eligible list, but before this staff report was issued and before the Human Service Commission decided to take no action.
That's correct. And it's the state...
And the city did not dispute that in their brief. Is that correct?
That's correct.
I'll ask the city that as well.
That's correct. And if you look at it's item number 4 in the respondent's itemized statement of the record, which is the letter from Thomas Fox dated February 20th, 2024, stating it's the second to last paragraph that discusses the Officer Humphrey's interview with Internal Affairs held on January 3rd, 2024, which is very clearly months after the decision to remove him. So there is no way that the Human Resources Department could have relied upon that decision in making it its...
Well, but do we know whether the investigation was complete when Human Resources removed him from the eligible list? I mean, you're saying that interview with Humphrey hadn't taken place, but do we know whether other parts of the investigation were complete? Maybe I just want to make sure I'm following what you're saying.
Yes. No, I appreciate that, Judge. So it appears that some of the investigation had been completed, but clearly not all of it.
Well, counsel, let me go back to your letter of September 19th, which you used as the appeal. You mentioned in that letter that the investigation had led to findings of no merit on April 18th on two of the allegations, correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
Okay, and that's well before September of 23.
Correct.
All right, and then the Loudermill hearing was held on May 17th. And from your letter, it appears to me that it's just kind of sat out there somewhere.
That's correct, Your Honor. So that's another particularly troubling piece of this is that, again, this alleged misconduct was from 2020, off-duty alleged misconduct from 2020.
But the complaint wasn't made until 2022.
Correct. And there's Believe it or not, subsequent to the, in my reply brief, I noted that there actually was finality after the city submitted its response brief. There is now final discipline that resulted in a B-level violation. And the reason why that's important is that even using the 2023 job posting, which was not the job posting that should have been considered by the Civil Service Commission, a B violation was not a disqualifying factor according to the job posting.
And only a C level. Help me understand your argument there, because the civil service rules don't talk about the level of violation.
That's correct, Your Honor. But when you, the job posting itself states what the qualifications are. In 2023, it stated what the qualifications are, and there was a specific portion that discussed prior disciplinary history, which then effectively what it does is it sets the bar for what the prior disciplinary history, which would be disqualifying under the civil service rules. Because otherwise, if it just leaves it open to say that a sustained violation of any policy at any point in time, then it would render the posting meaningless at that point. But that's, again, the procedural irregularities here are particularly troubling. The fact that on September of 2023, they say they tell Relator, you've been removed from the eligible list under this rule.
So, yeah, I want to talk about that with you a little bit. What opportunity did Relator have to respond to the content of this January 29th, 2024 letter?
Relator did not have an opportunity to respond to it, and that's what's particularly troubling, is that had there been the initial disclosure of the reasons for the removal, which apparently Thomas Fox had, according to his February 20th, 2024 letter to the Civil Service Commission, then there would potentially be an opportunity to respond. Instead, the only opportunity under the civil service rules are submitting your reasons for the appeal in writing, and then Human Resources does an investigation, submits it to the Civil Service Commission, where the relator did not have an opportunity to be present, did not have an opportunity to present arguments or respond to the memorandum.
So, and as I understand your brief, but correct me if I'm wrong, Relator wasn't interviewed as part of this human resources investigation?
Correct. Which, again, the Civil Service Commission rules indicate that HR will appoint an individual to investigate the appeal, which you would assume would include some sort of attempt to contact Relator.
So, and that seems fair, but if do these concerns about opportunity to provide information and respond to the staff report go to your due process argument?
They do, because, well, first of all, you...
And then what case suggests that there is a due process right to remain on that eligibility list? I mean...
So there's nothing on point, because it's rare that I think this is a case of first impression for the court of a removal from an eligibility list. This one's a little unique compared to traditionally what you'll see is an actual complaint about due process for not being promoted. But in this case, we're not asking that he be promoted. We're asking that he just remain on the eligibility list.
But is there any requirement, and I think you argued that there is, and I think the city disagreed, but is there any requirement that if he's on the eligibility list that he be given a promotion?
There is no requirement that he be promoted if he's on the eligibility list.
So what is the benefit then of remaining on the eligibility list?
So that he would be able to be promoted at some point. So the process generally would go, and it's explained in the...
But it's still discretionary. There's no guarantee he's going to get the promotion. You'd agree with that?
I would agree with that.
Okay.
Yes, Your Honor. And part of, in the explanation that they, that the, that Ms. Krueger gave in the promotion process is because of the open investigation, Relator was passed over for promotion. But I don't want to get too deep into the weeds about the promotion process, is that when there's vacancies, that it goes to a panel of supervisors, commanders, inspectors, deputy chiefs, somebody from the chief's office, where they interview the prospective candidates, and then they select them. The chief's office has the ability to pass over up to three individuals, which is what they had exercised because of the open case that was pending here. And particularly troubling here is that...
But before he was removed, he was passed over as well. Is that correct?
That's correct, because of the open investigation.
Investigation, right. Okay.
And particularly troubling is that, as the city's brief and Ms. Krueger's memorandum explained, that they wanted to remove him so they could open a new sergeant's hiring process. The process, the civil service rules lays out a process for, in case where there are three or fewer members remaining on the eligible list. What happens is they start a new list, and those three remain at the top of the list. What's showing is that while this case was pending, the city had no problem remaining on the eligible list. When it got down to just him on the list, instead of following the rules, their civil service rules, and starting a new process, and him remaining now as the number one candidate, they removed him from the list arbitrarily. They have the ability, they had no problem keeping him on the list while this case was pending, while his internal affairs case was pending, and they removed him arbitrarily.
And that's because, in your view, it didn't comply with the civil service rules?
Correct.
Thank you.
It appears that's my time.
All right, you'll have 5 minutes for rebuttal.
Thank you.
May it please the court. My name is Mark Enslin. I'm assistant city attorney. I'm here on behalf of the realtor. The city views this as a pretty simple case. There are two questions that are relevant, and the first one is, did the city have discretion to remove officers from an eligibility list? The answer to that is unquestionably yes. I think my esteemed colleague admitted that the civil service rules unquestionably give HR discretion.
Well, I'm not sure appellant's counsel or relator's counsel admitted that. I think relator's counsel challenges whether it was permissible under the rules given the provisions in the job posting relating to disciplinary actions and eligibility for the position.
Well, I think what the job posting talks about is whether you're disqualified or not. That would not trump the civil service rules, which under 6.12, which we quoted extensively, unquestionably give HR discretion to remove someone from an eligibility list.
Why isn't the job posting read into the civil service rules as sort of conditioning removal under, I think it was paragraph G, was it, that he was removed under?
So the important thing here is the situation that we're in, and I do want to directly answer your question, but what Realtor's trying to set up is a situation where no one can be removed from an eligibility list until there's a sustained violation. That's what his argument sets up.
Well, I think he's arguing that no one can be removed unless the city provides some substantial evidence and some basis for why that removal is happening, and that in this case, the letter did not meet the kind of evidentiary standards that we require for this kind of removal, regardless of the discretion. I think that's the argument here.
And if that's the argument, that wipes out all of his process arguments, right? And
I guess I'm getting to the substantive part of his argument. Setting aside the due process argument, I think that he's raised both a substantial evidence and arbitrary and capricious arguments under the common law standard, which is that despite the city having wide discretion with regard to people being on the list, that at a minimum, under our law, the city has to support that decision with substantial evidence, and it can't just arbitrarily, outside of its normal processes, its normal procedures, it can't just arbitrarily remove a person. And I do think that there is a troubling lack of information that was at least provided to the relator in this case as for why he was removed as opposed to passed over.
And so first of all, absolutely we agree. If that's what we're talking about now, we're not talking about due process. We're talking about...
Setting aside the due process arguments.
Yeah. Again, that to me is the second question. I mean, was the city's decision arbitrary and capricious? We stand by that decision.
Well, was it supported by substantial evidence is also a requirement under the common law standard.
And it absolutely was. The allegations against him and the evidence that was available at the time because the...
You say the evidence that was available at the time, and I misspoke earlier. I said it was part G. It was actually E. But the relator is arguing that at the time he was removed from the eligibility list, there wasn't this interview with him that the city later relied on to basically affirm its initial decision to remove him from the eligibility list. So what information was available to the city at the time he was removed from the eligibility list as reflected in the record before us?
The allegations against him and the photos that support it.
How do we know that was available to the city? I'm a little troubled by our record because it doesn't reflect... You know, there's a lot of missing dates. There's a transcript from an interview, but there's no date on it. There's a photo, and I don't have it up before me. I'll try and pull it up here, but I don't recall seeing a date on the photo. So how do we know the timing?
The timing isn't in the record, but I will...
So then how do we know the decision isn't arbitrary and capricious?
Well, the decision that was made postdates that. So the decision that we're actually appealed from here, the Civil Services Commission's decision to make no action and the HR's decision to affirm its original decision was based on the evidence that is in the record.
So you're saying then that the evidence that the city relied on or Human Resources relied on in removing him initially from the eligibility list is not relevant to our decision here. What's relevant is what the... was before the city at the time it made its decision on the appeal.
I wouldn't say it's not relevant, but I would say if there's substantial evidence in the record at the time the decision is made from which this appeal is taken, that's substantial evidence, and I believe that there is.
But isn't the Civil Service Commission approving the 924 letter? So, I mean, why does the Civil Service Commission get to look at evidence outside of what was decided in the 920? I'm just having trouble understanding why the Civil Service Commission is allowed to take into account more information when really what they're doing is saying either HR made the right call or didn't make the right call on 924.
I think what the Civil Service Commission is saying that HR made the right call is in the subsequent investigation following the 924. So HR makes an initial determination to remove him from an eligibility list on 924. They then conduct an investigation and determine whether that was essentially a good decision or not. That's what gets passed to the Civil Service Commission, which the Civil Service Commission gives a thumbs up or thumbs down on. They approved, and that's how we end up where we do.
So you're saying that there's no obligation before 924 to do any investigation?
What I'm saying is before 924, HR has to meet the civil service rule standard. That's what's in 6.12. And I believe they absolutely met that standard, that they had discretion and they made a determination under 6.12 that he should be removed from the eligibility list.
It's just really unclear to me what had changed, if anything, between 924 and when he was certified as eligible in August of 22.
Can I interrupt for a minute? Are we talking about 924 or 923?
924 of 23. Yeah, sorry. Okay. I keep saying that.
923. Right.
Yeah. Right. 920, sorry. That is confusing. So it's really...
Wasn't it September 14th of 2023?
Oh, you're right.
Yep.
Oh,
I was confused,
yeah,
too.
Sorry.
Thank you.
So 923, I apologize. So it's very unclear to me what happened between August of 2022 and September of... What changed between August of 2022 and September of 2023 that... It just doesn't seem... I can't glean from the record that anything had substantively changed between those two dates.
So the record is not clear. We don't have a record of that.
So
that
why isn't the record more fully developed? I mean, we can only review a decision based on the record before us, and it seems to me the city... You know, I have the photo up here. There's no date on the photo. The transcript has no date. There's no indication on what the city relied on when it did, at the point it did remove him from the eligibility list. I mean, it's very difficult for us to conduct the review that we need to review.
Can I come at it from a slightly different angle? I just want to get my question answered on this. When he's put on the eligibility list in August of 22. It's been known for months that here's an IA investigation, correct?
That's what we can glean from what is in the record.
Right. And that's the city's policy, to allow people under investigation to be on these lists.
I believe he met the criteria, so okay. He was permitted to be on.
But they were aware of the investigation.
The only reason I'm hesitating is when you say the city, obviously... The city as a whole, yes, I cannot disclaim that the city as a whole was aware of the investigation and aware he was on the list. When individuals started to put together, there was an open investigation about an individual who was on a list, that isn't in the record, and I don't know when that happened.
Well, I understood from the record that he was to stay there until June of 24 under normal circumstances, correct?
That is my understanding.
Okay. So the city deviated from its policy by removing him in September of 23. And it appears from the record the only reason they did that was because he was the one name on the list, the one name remaining, correct?
I disagree with that. I don't think the city deviated from its policy. The city has a policy under the civil service rules under 6.12 that permits it to remove individuals in its discretion when it deems fit.
But you've been on that list for a year and a half at that point, right? Or over a year.
That is true, although it may be that nothing happened in that year.
Well, he'd been number six on the list, as I understood it, when he was put on the list originally.
Your Honor's right. I don't disagree with the facts that you're stating. And all I'm saying is there isn't a record that shows exactly why the determination was made when it was made.
Right. Relator's argument in part is that if he is the final name on that list in September of 23, that the promotional list requires the department to select the top person on the list. So he was going to be the next appointment if he wasn't removed from that list. I mean, as I understood the argument as well, we have a lot of needs for sergeants and we need a longer list. But he was the only name, from what I can tell on the record, and that would have been to put him at the top of the list.
So, I mean, we're straying outside of the record. That is not my understanding of how it works. I mean, okay. My understanding is there always is discretion to remove. There's also discretion to close it down and reopen it, in which case he may have been at the last, but he may have gotten bumped. So,
well, you're saying it's outside of the record that he was the one name on the list?
No.
That's on the record?
That's okay. My understanding, yes.
All right.
Can I just go back to the
record
issue here? How is Relator given an opportunity to submit information into the record prior to a final decision by the Human Resources Commission?
I don't believe he is.
There's no opportunity.
Other than he was allowed to appeal and he submitted his appeal and that's his opportunity as I understand it.
And do you disagree that he wasn't given information beyond what Relator's counsel represented in terms of the reason for the removal?
I do not disagree that he was given the notice that is in the record and nothing.
That's very limited. It cites the provision of the civil service rule.
Yes, Your Honor. Yep.
And how is that an adequate opportunity for someone who's removed from an eligibility list to effectively appeal?
I think that comes back to, are we talking about, does he have, what notice is he entitled to?
Well, assuming, setting aside the due process piece, and in terms of, for an agency's decision to not be arbitrary and capricious, it would seem that there should be some opportunity for the individual to at least respond to the information that the city's relying on, if the city is actually providing an opportunity for appeal.
And I think what we're talking about here are two things. And so one is, if he had a property right and had due process, then we can discuss whether that was
right.
Met
and
I'm
saying,
case.
Setting aside that, looking at it from an arbitrary and capricious perspective.
The city's argument on arbitrary and capricious is that the city has discretion. Why discretion under 612? And because this investigation was open, there were very serious allegations of misconduct. The city looked at those. There's some objective proof of those that was sufficient. That is substantial evidence that 612 was satisfied.
So basically, the city's position is because he doesn't have a due process right here, it wasn't required to give him an opportunity to respond to the September staff report or to provide any evidence of his own.
Yes, yes. And just in closing, I just want to go back to the big picture. I don't get to stand up here and pound the table for the city very often. The city did the right thing here. There were very serious allegations of...
We understand the seriousness of the allegations, and I don't mean to dismiss that at all. But we are required to consider whether the decision was arbitrary and capricious, is supported by substantial evidence, otherwise meets the common law standard of review, and whether there's a due process right here. So I do not mean to suggest that I am trying to diminish the significance of the underlying allegations at all, but there is a legal standard that applies here.
And may just have 1 minute to respond to that. I'm out of time. Again, it has to be judged against 612. So 6.12 provides wide discretion. There are means for him to dispute this. He disputed the allegations in the disciplinary process, and that process fully vetted. Part of what happened here is you have discretion to remove someone so that disciplinary and that process where he has a chance to respond can fully play out. The alternative is you have two processes going which are doing the same thing. That isn't what is required by 612. 612 gives wide discretion. And so the substantial evidence standard has to be measured against the standard he was removed by, and that is wide discretion. He did have an opportunity to dispute those allegations. And as he said, the discipline ultimately was sustained. The alternative here is we have to promote people while an investigation is pending, and that is not the policy of the city, nor good policy. Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you. Any rebuttal?
Thank you. I'll be very brief. I do want to point out that the record of the decision should have been captured as of September 14th, 2023, when the decision to remove was made. The fact is that the record at that time is frankly unknown.
But why is our are you suggesting our review is limited to that record? Or what do you mean that it should be captured as of that time? I guess I'm not sure exactly what.
Because that's
arguing.
When the decision was actually made and he was actually removed from the sergeant's eligible list. He was removed effective that date. The letter that was provided on that date, which was missing any factual support whatsoever.
But the ultimate decision was made later.
Well, that's kind of the interesting.
Because the agency provides an appeal, an administrative appeal process, and the final agency decision isn't made until after that process is completed.
That's correct, because having to exhaust administrative remedies, understood. However, the facts that were the appeal, The investigation of the appeal is to determine whether HR was correct in its decision to remove relator from the sergeant's eligible list. And the fact is, which is shown throughout both in the February 20th, 2024 letter and Ms. Krueger's memorandum, showing that the facts were discovered after the fact, and those were clearly not able to be considered at the time the decision to remove relator from the sergeant's eligible list. The other interesting piece here is there wasn't a decision.
Do you have any case law that would support your view on that?
No, because this is such.
I don't think you. Well, anyway, go ahead.
No, it's just because this is such an unusual.
I'm not sure. I mean, it's that unusual because there's agency, city decisions that are made all the time that are subject to review by the Court of Appeals.
Yes. No, I understand that, Judge. But for the most part, when you're talking Civil Service Commission decisions, you're looking at usually disciplinary decisions that are being appealed. In this case, if you actually look at the record, the Civil Service Commission's decision was to take no action.
So I'm not sure you actually argued in your brief that any information after that initial decision to remove him from the eligibility list couldn't be considered, it's not properly considered on appeal.
I did bring it up in discussion about Thomas, in my reply brief about Thomas Fox's decision, his memorandum citing to a January 4th, 2024 interview, which was clearly reviewed, discovered after the decision.
And where in your reply brief can you point me to what you're referring to?
Give me one moment here. It was page 6 talking about his, bottom of page 6 into 7 talking about Mr. Fox's memorandum citing to an interview conducted over 3 months after the appeal was filed.
But you don't argue, we can read the brief again.
Yeah.
And I'm not sure. It seems like you're making a different argument now, but I'll go back and look
at it. No, it's just going to the arbitrary and capricious nature of the actual decision making. And frankly, if you look at Deb Krueger's memorandum, as I discussed, addendums pages 4 to 5, that everybody on the panel has noted that as of July 27, 2023, one candidate with an open case, comma, remain eligible.
And so is this case moot given that the time for that eligibility list expired, as I understand it?
No, I don't think so, especially because it's respondent didn't make any argument that it was moot, but it's clearly capable of repetition just based upon the timing of in this decision, removing him. Ultimately what would happen is that by the time we'd get to the Court of Appeals and get to briefing, effectively we'd be in the same situation where, well, there's a new list, the old list is expired, so it's moot. So it would be capable of repetition if it is moot. But the fix would be to return it either to the Civil Service Commission or to place him back on the eligible list, as there's now going through now an additional process coming up in this year as well. But if there are any other questions, in closing, I would like to point out Ms. Krueger's memorandum on addendum page 5, the decision to remove Officer Humphrey, it clearly demonstrates that the city had no problem keeping him on the eligible list despite the case being open. They arbitrarily decided they want to remove him so they would be able to have three people to pass over on the next list as opposed to just two and keeping passing over relator.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you to both counsel for your arguments today. The matter is submitted, and we will issue our opinion within the statutory time frame.